Thank you for that song. Well, good evening to everyone that is here. Carolyn asked when we got in the car on the way this evening, do you have any notes? And I said, yes, I've got notes. I said, I think you're more nervous than I am. Now I'm not so sure if she is or if I am. I had to think this morning as Terrell said that sometimes things need to be said again because people forget or new ones are here when he mentioned about the prayer requests for Max and Anna. And I guess that's kind of the reason I'm up here this evening. I guess I've made some comments over the time about my eyes, and some people are asking, what's he talking about? So I'm just wondering, how many of you are 27 years and younger? See your hands. Now it's basically right up front here. Because this happened 27 years and 4 months ago. Now I realize that some of you are older than that. In fact, I have some cards here that I got when I was in the hospital that I think some of you are still here. I think the first one that I had here, it says Chad in his handwriting, and then it says Yoder afterwards. So he was able to write his first name, but not his last one. But the primary department sent cards. I think most of you are still all here in this congregation. Now, I think some of you sometimes wonder why every time you see me, I'm like this. Put them on backwards. Right? Any place you see me outside, that's usually the way I am. A hat of some kind and glasses. And by the way, just for your information, these yellow tinted ones work really good after dark or around dusk. The other day I was at a restaurant in Warsaw. One of the guys from Wakarusa walked in and sat in the booth behind us. I turned around and I said, I think I know you. And he wasn't sure he knew me. And later on he said, if you had your hat and glasses on, I would have known you. If I would title this little talk this evening, or give it a title, I would probably title it But God. But God. Because that's a phrase that I used a lot at one time, more so probably than ever. And I'd just like to read a verse where that's in, because that's the verse that came to my mind this afternoon when I was thinking about this. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, there hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. Now I realize that's talking about different things, but in my situation, he was faithful, and he did not give me more than what I could handle. There were a few times that I wondered, but as I look back, he never gave me more than what I could handle. Yes, my hat and my sunglasses, and every once in a while you'll see that I've got an abrasion on my forehead. Any guess where that comes from? It comes from low-hanging limbs that I don't see until I hit them. And over the past number of years, especially in mowing a couple cemeteries, I have a tendency to do that a couple times a year. And then I started cutting them off, and I still find them. But I don't see because I've got the shade over my eyes. because I cannot handle bright sunshine. That's something that I struggle with probably more than anything. There was a time that I would Carolyn would turn the lights on in the house, and I'd come along behind and turn them out, because until an hour or so after I'm up, I can't handle lights, or until I get my lens, my special lenses in. So I'm going to divide this up into three parts, try to anyway. The hospital stay, the things that I dealt with since then, and some ideas of what we can do when someone is in the hospital for a long term. I was in the hospital almost a full month, from July 24th until I think August the 22nd in 1997. So those of you who put your ages in. And it was on July the 24th, we were celebrating Tanya's birthday. Tanya's here this evening. And so, you know, basically, it was her first birthday, so you know how old she is. But the next day, I had, that evening, my eyes were getting itchy. I remember sitting at the supper table, and my eyes were really getting itchy, and I couldn't figure out what the problem was. But the next day, I had red, bubbly blisters in my mouth and a bad case of the hiccups. And those hiccups stayed with me. I'm not sure. I'm going to say at least 4 or 5 days, even after in the hospital. So I made an appointment with the doctor the next day. It was Thursday, as I recall, and Friday I made an appointment with the doctor. And the doctor and I grew up together. We knew each other well. And he said, well, it's a reaction to the sulfa that I gave you as an antibiotic a couple weeks ago. He said, take this Benadryl and it'll go away. Well, Saturday came, and I had a fever of 102 and a rash that added to the symptoms, and my mouth was getting worse and my eyes were getting worse. So I called the doctor, and he prescribed cortisone. And when Carolyn went to pick it up, the pharmacist said, this will do the trick. Well, it didn't. The next day was Sunday, and I was supposed to preach here, right behind this pulpit. And I had a swollen tongue, and I had a difficulty even swallowing the cream of wheat that Carolyn made for me for breakfast. So Carolyn kind of apologetically called the doctor again, and he didn't like what he was hearing, and he told me to go to the emergency room, which the emergency room for Dr. Engelmeyer at that time was at the St. Joe Mishawaka Hospital, which even no longer exists at this time. So I went. He said they'd give me some IV treatments and probably be a couple hours, and then I'd be home. Well, that couple hours turned into, like I said, till August the 22nd. I could hardly wait to get there because I was pressing my fingers against my eyes. You've probably heard me say that I would have gouged them out at that time if I could have. I don't think I would have, but that's what I felt like doing because that's how much they hurt. And they put me on Benadryl, of course, and a steroid that they gave me intravenously. And at noon, that was in the morning, and at noon they gave me some more Demerol. That didn't lessen any pain, and at 9 o'clock that evening they were still giving me double the Demerol. And we kept thinking, I guess, that we would still be dismissed, but that didn't happen until 27 days later. The doctor in ER, there's a lot of things that happen that if I wasn't a believer, I would say was luck or fortunate or whatever. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in coincidences. But the doctor, the first doctor that I seen in ER, had a patient about a year before that had Stevens-Johnson syndrome, or SJS as we call it. And I'll explain that in just a little bit. But he had a patient before, so he knew basically, or figured he knew what it was. And he figured he could stop the reaction, but he couldn't stop it. And so, like I say, Stevens-Johnson syndrome is named after the two men who actually discovered it. It was named after them. SJS, it's an allergic reaction. It can be life-threatening. They told me that only one in 1.3 million people will get it. And no one knows exactly what causes it. But usually it's a reaction to medication, although it can be reactions of other kinds also. In my case, it was medication. And that's why I wear the necklace around my neck. It causes the immune system to be compromised, is what it does. It attacks the mucous membranes, which was why my eyes were affected so badly, and it also causes severe blistering of the skin, which eventually the skin comes off, which is what happened to me. Most of my body's skin came off. It causes, it attacks the nerve endings, which is why I lost all my fingernails and all my toenails. By the way, Carolyn has a book back there. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's about yay thick. And she is the type that writes down everything and keeps track of everything. And you will find all fingernails and toenails in that book if you want to look and see them. You'll find other things there too. The doctor told me that the inside of my body looked like my outside, and you will see on the pictures if you look what my body looked like most of the time. And I'm still dealing. I'm right now. In fact, in the next couple of weeks, I'll be going in to see what's wrong with my esophagus, because the doctor tells me that the Stevens-Johnson, my body was scarred on the inside just like the outside, and my esophagus is that way also. And so I've been, these 27 years, I've been dealing with it, but it's catching up with me. So we're going to look and see what they can do about that. So, no, it hasn't ended. It still goes with me. The rash continued to spread throughout my body. And most of those rashes turned purple, black, and blue. Now, I had to force my eyes open with my fingers while I was in the hospital, and I could eat very little because of the condition, all the flesh out of my mouth, and what was there was in blisters. They brought an ophthalmologist into the house there in Mishawaka to the hospital and to check my eyes. And he said there were scratches on my cornea and I needed to keep them lubricated. I still lubricate those two eyes today, daily, hourly sometimes, that I lubricate my eyes. He also said, standing beside my bed, and I'll never forget it, he says, "You will never see again." And I said, "But God." I'll tell you another story about another doctor a little bit later. All of my doctors, or most all of my doctors, were Jewish doctors. I also found that very interesting. This was a Jewish doctor. He still sees me today when he comes into the office when I'm there. I just seen him not too long ago. And the other doctor that now takes care of me reminded him of what he told me that day standing beside my bed. But at my request, I was anointed with oil on Tuesday evening, the 29th of August. And at the point that I was anointed, I had no more pain. And I was in tremendous pain. But the moment that Bill anointed me, my pain left me. But the things that I seen while I was being anointed is another story. I will just tell you this much. There was an individual, a man, that tried his best to stop Bill from anointing me. And I said, "You have to leave." And Bill didn't know what I was talking about. I said, "You have to leave." And he went halfway to the door and I said, "No, you have to leave the room." And that person left the room. I would know that person if it was a person. I don't think it was, but he had a figure. I would know that individual if I seen him today. But he did everything he could until I told him he had to leave to stop from anointing me. And I told Carolyn that night when she went home, I said, be very careful on the way home because Satan's not going to like this. Though the pain in my eyes went away, I still was very sick. My skin started to turn yellow because my liver had functioned, wasn't functioning properly. I couldn't eat because of the blisters that were in my mouth. My tongue was peeling off, the skin was peeling off, and it was raw. I lost, like I said, everything out of my mouth, and so they ended up, long story short, they ended up eventually just pureeing my food like baby food so that I could eat it. And it had to be just the right temperature. I still have a problem with ice. I do not like ice water. And I don't like ice in the water because it's just too cold. It still affects me in that sense. It wasn't until July the 31st that I was even able to take a shower. And then they were concerned that maybe the skin would start even come off more. But it was felt good to be up, although I could hardly walk because of the blisters on my feet. But I made it back, and Carolyn kept pretty close track of me most of the time. Every day it seemed like there was something different to be concerned about. They were concerned about an infection, so they gave me what they called swish and swallow. And I don't know if you nurses know what swish and swallow is, but it's not good in your mouth. I despise that stuff, but I had to swish it around in my mouth and then swallow it. Then it was creamed that put on my body to prevent the skin infection because now I had raw skin. And the doctor was afraid that they would have to put me into something to take care of an antidepressant. They figured I would get depressed. So to help me relax, they put me in a whirlpool. That was fun. Great big tank of water, and they would put me in there on a board, and like we have had in the ambulance, they would put that in and lift me down with chains and put me in the tank. The last day, they left me off the board and said, you can do what you want to, and that was pretty nice. But actually, that also helped take the skin off of me in that whirlpool, and that actually improved my disposition as well as my body's as far as starting to heal it. My blood sugar went up. I developed staph infections, so they put me on a PICC line. I suppose some of you know what a PICC line is. But they wanted to make sure that my heart got the food that it needed, so it went up my arm, the line went up my arm, into my heart, and then they fed me sugar. So much sugar that they had to give me insulin to bring the sugar back down. But it worked. So the doctor decided that he had a vacation time coming, so he went on vacation for a week. This was after being there 2 weeks, and he thought that when he came back that I would be gone. He figured I'd be dismissed. But when he came back, I was still in room 211. I'll never forget the number of that room. He wasn't happy. And then he started asking questions at the foot of the bed. And there was three or four interns that were taking care of me along with his partner, the doctor's partner, lady doctor, as I recall. And being an EMT, not too much got away from me. I knew what was going on. I knew what was supposed to be happening. I didn't realize that I was not getting the care that I was supposed to have gotten. But he was asking questions, and the interns were all standing there saying, yes, they did this, yes, they did that. I said, no, they didn't. And he looked at me, and I said, there was some medication that I was supposed to have gotten. I said, I didn't get it. He went out of the room. He came back and he said, he's right. You guys are wrong. And things started to happen, and they happened fast. The next day, they came back. That, by the way, that one intern is now my current doctor. He came and apologized. He sat beside the bed, and he really apologized while I was still in the hospital. And when Dr. Wally quit his practice here in Napanee, I asked him, I said, which doctor do I want? And he said, you want Dr. Slorky. And I said, what? He said, yeah, I think you and him will get along fine. And so far we have. In fact, just the other week he asked me. He sat down and he asked me a bunch of questions. Then he said, well, I've had two SJS patients. And I just looked at him and I said, was I the first? And he says, yes, you were. So he jumped calling the staff. Things happened. They decided to order, he ordered high doses of steroids. And those of you who have been on steroids, when they're really high doses, and I don't remember what the dose was, but I know that at 11 o'clock in the morning, they give me the steroids, and by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was ready to go home. Just that fast it worked. Or did it? Did something else happen? Does anybody remember what I have shared in the past that happened at the same time? That you had a part in?
Is that when the church had a day of prayer and fasting?
Yes. The same day that the church decided to have prayer and fasting was the day that I was ready to go home from the hospital. Luck? Coincidence? No, I don't believe so. Just one thing that I'd like to comment. I don't think we realize what anointing, what prayer and fasting can do. And I am a firm believer that anybody that wants to be anointed, and Terrell and Bill and the rest of them knew this, anybody who wants to be anointed, I'll be the first one to be there to help. I have seen what it does. I have felt what it does. And I had another anointing that I'll just mention in a little bit here to get ahead of myself. But anyway, the doctor came in a day or so later and he says, well, let's try it. I said, what? He says, I'm going to let you go home. But I went home nearly blind. I could only see about 15 feet, and I could not read at all. I took 6 different prescriptions home with me and a diet of soft, bland foods. I was pretty weak at the age of 51. All I wanted was my lazy boy chair, a dark room, and things to be quiet. I didn't even listen to music, and usually I could listen to music, but I didn't want to anymore. And then we got a 22-page itemized hospital bill. Anyone want to guess what it was 27 years ago for a month in the hospital? Not near as much as probably you would think, in a sense, was $44,825.20. Okay, so much for the hospital stay. Now we're home from the hospital. I needed to slowly get off the steroids. They told me that I would puff up and look like the Pillsbury Doughboy. I did. I still do. I only weighed 165 pounds, by the way, when I came home from the hospital. My last appointment with the medical doctor, as close as we could recall, was on April the 28th of 98. He told me he had never seen anything like it in his 20 years of practice, and his partner told me, or Carolyn, I'm not sure, did he tell you or how it was? It was a lady doctor, but she told us anyway that she did not expect me to survive. My brother came to the hospital which Merv was a professor of nursing at Goshen College. He had never heard of it. He decided to look it up and study up on it. He came to the hospital and said, "You shouldn't be here." But God. My body seemed to heal pretty well, but the lasting effect has been my fingernails, my toenails, and my eyes. And I still get blisters in my mouth from time to time. My eyelids have scar tissue under them. It's a lot of my problem even yet today. Instead of being mucousy and smooth, they've got scar tissue on them. And so, and my eyelids turned in. All four of my eyelids turned in. So my eyelashes were growing into my eyes instead of out. So one of the first surgeries they did was cut my eyelids and turn them out so that my eyelashes would grow out. But that didn't work too well. My eyelashes still grew in, and if it's only one eyelash, it hurts, and you can't see. I'm still pulling eyelashes. Still go. Just was there this past Monday. We made a lot of trips to the eye doctor to have lashes pulled, and I've had them lasered out. I've had them pulled out. I've had the eyelids turned. So the thought came up about cornea transplant for my eyes and maybe even doing something with my eyelids. They said, well, the more they do with my eyelids, the worse it's going to make it. So leave the eyelids alone. And they sent me to Dr. Whitson in Indianapolis to see about a cornea transplant for my left or right eye, which was totally blind. My left eye, just for your information, and still is like a cracked windshield. And so, depending on what I look at, the crack is right at what I'm looking at. So depending on what I look at, and that's why I have problems sometimes with looking at people, if I don't turn my head a little bit or whatever, I can't see the detail. Is that person looking at me, or is he not looking at me? Because it's right where I want to look. And it still is today. And I'll explain a little bit of what changed there in a little bit. But anyway, this eye was basically blind. Plus, it started to deteriorate. So I don't know if you guys remember when I had my eyelid sewed shut. This eye was sewed shut because that actually saved the cornea of that eye. Instead of having it burst, it saved that cornea. So just some of the things that I'm glad we have doctors. Now, when that was sewed shut late one evening in Indianapolis, Carolyn went from the chair to the floor, but she left the room after that, and she didn't go in any surgeries after that either. But so she can tell you about that. Sheila was with us. She could watch anything. Well, the doctor at Indianapolis for the cornea transplant said his record, and now listen to this, he said his record is, his rate of success is very good, and I am not a good one to try doing a cornea transplant on, plus it wouldn't work anyway, and so he's not going to do it, and that's the time that I again said, but God. And he said, God's got nothing to do with it. Now, he's a Jewish doctor also. He said, God's got nothing to do with it. But you know what? A year later, I returned, and we talked about this the last couple days. I don't know why we went back the second time. And he looked at my eye and everything, and then he says, when do you want it? And I says, when do I want what? He says, your cornea transplant. And I says, I'm ready now. There was no hesitation on my part. I want it now. And he says, well, you know the 800 number. And I said, yeah, I know the 800 number. Now, very interestingly, again, the night before we went to Indianapolis that time, I asked, and I'm not sure who all was there. Terrell might have been there by this time. But I asked for another anointing. I mean, just things were not going right. Nothing was going right. And I asked to be anointed again. So the night before I went down to Indianapolis, I was anointed. That day he says, when do you want your cornea transplant? But God. Well, November the 24th of 98 was the day of the cornea transplant. Now, a lot of you say that I'm either black or white. You know, I see black or I see white. Well, you know, there's more truth to that than what you think. This eye comes from an 11-year-old black girl. So I see black and white. A girl in Chicago. Now I can see. In fact, I watched them do that. I was awake. I was conscious. I could see what they were doing. I could see them take the cornea out, put the other one in, and I could watch them stitch it. I can see. I can read. But there's still problems that I have in reading. As you see, I still have reading glasses. And just like, I don't know if you've noticed, but I just mentioned this to Carolyn today. We don't sing out of the same songbook. She has to have one because I can't see it if she holds it or if we hold it together. I can't see the words. For one thing, the print is too small in her songbooks. The other thing is if I have to look sideways, I don't see it. So that's why if you see us having both have to have a songbook, that's why. But I can see and I can read. But there were some episodes since then. We went to Arizona. These 11 years before I got the Boston lens, for 11 years, Carolyn did all the driving. But we went to Arizona. We went to Virginia. And in Virginia was the first that I had an episode in Virginia at Arts that I had a hair embedded in my eye. And once you get something like that in your eye, it starts an infection, and I ended up the doctor, a pretty sick man. In fact, he called me the Duke, and I said, what are you saying? He said, well, you got to be John Wayne because he's the only one that could handle the pain you're going through. I said, well, I'm not John Wayne. But then he mentioned a doctor in Boston that makes lenses for eyes like mine, and well, yeah, we knew that, but I'll finish that story in a little bit. I had a retinal occlusion in 2005, which I lost part of this eye in the back, but it's not hindering me very much. But then Boston in 2008, and we have Sheila, or especially I have Sheila to thank for this, but Sheila's husband, Dana, has problems with his eyes, as does his sister, Betty, and maybe some of the other family. But Sheila called this Boston, Massachusetts, the Boston Foundation for Sight, and she told him about Dana, and she told him about me. And, of course, by this time, Dana had some lenses that he was wearing that was helping him, but the doctor in Boston said, I know we can help your dad. So he started asking questions. Sheila couldn't answer and said, you got to call my dad. So one evening, we got a call from Massachusetts, and here it was Dr. Rosenthal. Actually, it was his son, was a doctor's son that called me, and he said, had a lot of questions. Long story short, he says, we can help you. So we packed up and went to Boston. Now, that wasn't cheap, but again, everything worked out that almost every cent of that trip was paid by other people and not necessarily individuals as far as that's concerned, although some of it was paid by individuals. And it was unbeknownst to us when we decided to go. It just happened? No, I don't think it just happened. But you know, we went to Boston and we got those lenses. And of course, by this time I had the cornea transplant. So they first put one of these lenses on my right eye, but the eye couldn't handle it because your eyes need oxygen. My eye couldn't handle it, and so I only wear a lens like this. And I don't think you can probably see that, but that's about it's probably the size of a nickel. It's concave so that it holds fluid. I put fluid, if anybody wants to see this lens later, I can show you. But that's what's in my left eye, or one like it. You put fluid in that, and you put it in your eye without any bubbles in it. Get bubbles in it, and you have a problem. Without any bubbles in it, and that gives my eye my cornea, a smooth surface, and fills in that crack, so to speak. But like I was saying earlier, anything that I look at that's right at that crack, I still can't see the detail of it. But my eyes went from 20, you know, good eyes are 20/20. My eyes in Boston went from 20/400 to 20/40. That's a big difference. I seen stuff on the wall in the doctor's room there that I didn't know were on the wall when I went in, but they were there. I seen traffic on the highway that I didn't know was there, but I could see them then. After 2 weeks in Boston, we started home on Interstate 90. And about halfway home, I told Carolyn I want to drive. And I drove a good part of the way home. I've always had my driver's license, although that's another story. There's ways of getting those. And at this point, you wouldn't know when I'm driving, except Carolyn notices it once in a while, that I have a trouble seeing things. But I think I have better eyes than some of the rest of you have when it comes to that. Michiana Eye Center, we still go in Mishawaka. It's on Day Road. Now, by the way, like I said, where's Betty? Is Betty here? Yeah, okay. Betty, you identify with a lot that I'm saying, right? She went to the very same doctor in Boston that I did, Dr. Kwok, who had stayed with the Mennonites. And by the way, the Rosenthal Center in Massachusetts is all Jewish. But he went to a Mennonite, took some of his training in Canada, and actually lived in Mennonite homes when he was there. So he knew immediately when we walked in that we were Mennonites. Again, but God. But the Michiana Eye Center and Dr. Danahy, he was barely married when Dr. Weiss, the original doctor, said, you take him and take care of him. And he has ever since. We just seen him Monday. He's almost part of the family. In May of 1999, we went for the 100th time. In April of 2000, we went for the 200th time. In June of 2007, we went for the 300th time. And last Monday, we went for the 490th time, thanks to Carolyn, which keeps track of every one of them. And every time, those 100th, 200th, 300th, and 400th, she has made something, a cake or something, and they always know when we come in, oh, it must be the 200th or the 300th or the 400th time. And I'm still going. My next appointment is in March. I went as often as 3 and 4 times a week. We're now down to maybe once every 3 to 4 months. That's only happened in the last year, basically. It's time to close, but I'm going to finish with this. Some ideas of what you do and maybe not do when you go visit long-term patients. Cards are always an encouragement. Cards are always an encouragement. I have the primary department's cards. Chad Yoder, Michael Miller, Douglas Miller, which has gone to be with the Lord, Joseph Shum, Lindsay Martin, Lori Martin, Jared Yoder. They were in the primary department apparently during that time. I have a card that has all the primary department on it, including the teachers. Cindy, you were the superintendent, according to this. I think Carolyn was with you, superintendent, that year. But everybody's name. Out there on the table are a lot more cards that Carolyn kept. You can look at them if you care to. But I think we got a card from not just church people, but a lot of other people also. So cards are always an encouragement. Put personal notes on the cards. And brethren, if your wife makes the card, don't let her sign your name. You sign it yourself so that you know what it says on the card. Because I have come up to people and thanked them for the card, and they didn't know that their wife had sent one. Kind of puts them on the spot. And I told Carolyn after that, you don't send the card out unless I look at it and sign it. Carolyn would always read those cards to me in the hospital. Now remember, my eyes aren't open in the hospital. Most of my nurses I never seen. They could walk in here tonight, and unless they had jewelry or their voice, jewelry that was jangling or their voice, which I did identify some of them later on, that I met them someplace and I knew who they were by their voice or by their jewelry. But Carolyn would read me those cards. There was messages on the answering machine when she got home every day. By the way, young people, this was before cell phones. And so she had a lot of phone calls that she would get after she got home. Sometimes wouldn't get to bed, but you know, people would want to know and call. That's something we can do. Someone gave Carolyn some money and said they know that the car needs gas. Yes. It's 30 miles, 35 miles. Just one way. Someone canned tomato juice for her. Her sister and her mom canned her green beans that year. Dana kept my lawn mowed. And I think if I have the story straight, he went uptown one day to get something and was so much in a hurry that he ended up getting a ticket. And he hasn't forgotten. I don't remember, was it for running a stop sign or what it was, but he got a ticket. Visits are encouraged, I believe, and should be an encouragement to the one that's there, but not too long. Not too long to stay and visit. Toward the end of the stay at the hospital, the lady at the registration desk told someone that nobody gets more visitors than what Jerry does. I think you were all there and a lot of other people. How many of you remember coming, the Sunday school class coming and singing for me? Levon led the singing. What was the song I requested? I remember. Pray with the patient. And many of you did that. Many of you did that. Prayed with me. Say positive things. Don't talk about church problems and your personal problems. Don't say like someone did, well, it was raining today, so we thought we'd come visit you. The youth had a haystack benefit, which really, really helped. We have pictures of those. Really helped. That time was at the 4-acre fire station. After I was home, a lot of times there would be meetings and things to go to, and Some of you would pick me up and take me because I was not driving. Leroy did a lot of that. And I appreciated all of those things. If you are a family member, then be there. Be there. Now, I don't know what I would have done without my family, my two daughters and their families. Our extended family, Carolyn's and mine both, and the church family. You don't go through those things without support. And people can be a tremendous support. But be careful. Of course, now in my situation, most of the time I couldn't see. I wanted quiet. And so a lot of noise or a lot of talking and carrying on, somebody else may feel different about that, but that was the way I felt about it at the time. Even when people came after I was at home, after a certain amount of time, it's time to go home. It's time to leave the patient rest, because that's usually what's needed more than anything else. Does anyone have a question? Something that you were wondering about that I may have missed? Nope. The only thing that I could see that he was, I had to go back and have it checked a couple times. I don't know when was the last time that I would have been back. Which, by the way, they told me at the time it might last 10 years. Well, how long is 1998? And I was just told just this last Monday, your transplant is clear and as healthy as can be. Now, that doesn't mean it can't go bad tomorrow. But again, 10 years? I've had a lot longer than that. But what I was going to say is that he would look at that and he said one time, I don't believe in what I'm seeing. Would he acknowledge that God was a part of that? He never did to me. Any other questions? I don't like driving after dark. Of course, I think some of you are getting to that age that you don't like that anyway. But dark and rainy and headlights, it's not for headlights coming at you, that's not for me. I really struggle with that. But, like I told you, the yellow lenses make a big difference. And they work